Hi, you're listening to Gossip Int, the way to gossip intelligently. Gossip Int is a podcast that helps listeners learn critical thinking concepts by applying them to well-known pop culture events and real-world technology-focused examples. Here with us today, we have Laura Luthi, Diana Duviel, Bobby Jane Apostolos, and Caitlin Hopkins. And I'm Karen Frost. Details on our backgrounds can be found in the podcast bio. Although all participants today work at Microsoft, the views expressed here on this podcast belong to us alone and do not represent the views of Microsoft. Welcome to our creative and imaginative world of Gossip Int. Today, we're talking about our favorite conspiracy theories. I chose the topic because, as I've said before, everyone loves a good conspiracy theory. Conspiracy theories speak to our intrinsic belief in the presence of secrets in our world, of efforts by others to manipulate or control us, and they play on the pleasure it gives us to sniff out these perceived secrets. We've talked about conspiracy theories like chemtrails and QAnon, but we know that conspiracy theories can be found everywhere. So today, we're going to gossip a little bit about some of the conspiracy theories that have a particularly special place in our hearts. Laura, kick us off. What's your favorite conspiracy theory and why?
Okay, this is easy for me. Favorite to me means most entertaining and undeniably false when it comes to conspiracy theories. But there's also got to be some outlandishness and danger. And in this case, I think danger to science and progress for these conspiracies to propagate. So for me, an amateur astronomer and physics enthusiast, the flat Earth movement takes the cake. I know it's more serious than most of the fun ones that are going to be discussed today, but what can I say? Science deniers fascinate me. Also, there's a Pac-Man reference, so stay tuned. Despite the ancient Greeks discovering the Earth's shape and circumference in the 3rd century BC, in 2023, there is still a large and growing group of believers across our globe, that is a round one, that believe the Earth is actually flat. They even want other people to consider this as an alternative to modern science. It's hard to say how many flat Earth believers are out there. According to Smithsonian Magazine, membership in the Flat Earth Society, founded in 1956, once reached 3,500 people. Today, the society claims more than 500 members. And in an amazing conspiracy within a conspiracy twist, some believers in the Flat Earth want nothing to do with the OG Flat Earth Society, according to a 2019 CNN article. Many attendees of the annual Flat Earth International Conference in Dallas told the news agency that the original Flat Earth Society is a government-sponsored front designed to make flat earthers look bad. How's that for mind-bending? In the 2018 Netflix documentary, Behind the Curve, we meet several popular voices within the flat earth movement. Much of the focus is on competitive gamer, software analyst, and YouTuber Mark Sargent and his desire to draw attention to his belief in a flat earth. It also includes the founder of the Flat Earth International Conference, last held publicly in 2019. This film is amazing because we get to witness firsthand so many of the biases and mindset traps we have discussed on this podcast, coalescing in a kind of ignorance monster, my word, and playing out in the beliefs of these flat earthers. It's like mirror imaging on steroids and full-on delusion and groupthink par exemplar. These folks are conspiracy theorists who actually revel in pointing out other people's conspiratorial thinking while failing to recognize that characteristic in their own points of view on the shape of the Earth. They're scientists. Most of the ideas behind this flat Earth conspiracy theory stem from people looking toward the horizon and remarking that they simply cannot see a curvature in the Earth. Sargent's extensive explorations into flat Earth were made popular through his series of 2015 videos entitled Flat Earth Clues. It's hard to comprehend that these flat Earth believers are willing to openly tout their views and ridicule modern physics and quantum mechanics, but they do. They have conventions and encourage children to question science as if the entire discipline is subject to debate. But it is easy to understand that applying critical thinking skills to this hypothesis could entail quite the learning curve. You need me to understand quantum states and curved spacetime to fight this falsehood? Ugh, good luck. It's much simpler for flat earthers to just hand wave that away as unqualified nonsense. not exactly Newton's apple or something that is easily observed in the world. And hey, I get it. I don't understand quantum states either. Flat Earth theorizing follows from a mode of thought called the Zetetic Method, an alternative to the scientific method developed by a 19th century flat earther, in which sensory observations reign supreme. Flat Earth Society Vice President Michael Wilmore claims that the method places a lot of emphasis on recording empiricism and rationalism and making logical deductions based on empirical data, which in and of itself is a confounding statement because it sounds a lot like science. They even have a pseudoscientific and absolutely entertaining theory as to why one doesn't simply fall off the edge of their flat Earth. In 2018, flat earthers admitted that east-west travel is a reality and posited that space-time wraps around. Thus, we get the Pac-Man effect. I really think if this flat Earth conspiracy were called the Pac-Man conspiracy, we would have a lot more followers. Think of the t-shirts. So yes, flat earthers are serious, and they want you to take them seriously as an alternative to modern science. And this leads down a very dangerous ideological slope of debating scientific fact as belief and taking the truth is out there. One of my favorite axioms from one of my favorite sci-fi TV shows, The X-Files, and extrapolating and adding the truth is out there, but it's not what you think, and they're keeping it from us. It foments distrust in educational institutions, science, and especially government-backed science and technology development. Not surprisingly, the staged moon landing conspiracy feeds nicely into the flat earther logic. This all conspires, if you will, to ignore every analytic technique that we have discussed on this podcast. You could argue that it's an age-old human tradition to set out to prove something one already believes to be true, otherwise known as a self-fulfilling prophecy, and in this case, that the Earth is flat, and ignore evidence to the contrary, basically all of ancient and modern science in this case. However, elevating this hobby or eccentricity of questioning facts to a serious populist movement where it is propagated to the degree that it actually warrants NASA and other science organizations to devise counter-arguments seems to me to live somewhere in the theater of the absurd, or at the very least, anti-science fiction. More evidence for critical thinking.
Oh my, Laura. That's one I don't think I can take seriously. Moving on, how about you, Karen? What's your favorite conspiracy theory?
I don't know that I have a favorite conspiracy theory, but a conspiracy theory that I find interesting is the argument that singer Stevie Wonder isn't blind. If you're scratching your head about this one, you're not alone. This isn't a particularly well-known conspiracy theory, although it's been circulating around for well over a decade. For anyone unfamiliar with the backstory of Stevie Wonder's blindness, Wonder was born 6 weeks prematurely. That, together with an oxygen-rich hospital incubator, gave him retinopathy of prematurity, a condition where the eyes stop growing and the retinas detach. This means that Wonder has been blind basically since birth. Wonder's blindness has been extensively documented over his life, so why do some people think he might be more sighted than he claims? The question of Wonder's blindness first really hit the news in 2010 when Wonder caught a microphone knocked over by singer Paul McCartney while they were performing at the White House. A feat that theoretically shouldn't be possible, given he couldn't have seen it falling. And due to the music all around him, he definitely couldn't have heard it, even had there been a sound. You can watch this video on YouTube yourself, by the way. It's been widely circulated and discussed. I'm not entirely certain he didn't catch it by accident, but it's enough to make you think. According to a Miss Mbappe, allegedly a former girlfriend and collaborator of Wonder's in the late 1970s, although I haven't been able to corroborate that, Wonder is definitely sighted. Talking to an African radio station, Mbappe said Wonder faked being blind at a time when artists needed a gimmick in order to stand out, and has had to keep faking ever since. She cited Wonder's love of attending basketball games and taking photographs as proof there's no way he's blind. And indeed, in 1996, Wonder was photographed taking a picture of Michael Jackson at the Motown Museum, a rather odd thing for him to be doing unless it was a joke. And Wonder loves joking about doing sighted things like driving, taking pictures, and performing surgery. In 2019, former basketball player Shaquille O'Neal reported on a sports show having run into Wonder in an elevator in their apartment building. Wonder, who was entering the elevator, greeted Shaq by name, pressed a button on the elevator, and exited on his floor. And Shaq's not the only celebrity with questions. Singer Lionel Richie said on the Kelly Clarkson show he believes Wonder can see, and that when visiting Wonder's house once, Wonder took Richie to his car, where he turned the car on and started driving it. Was Richie kidding? Maybe yes, maybe no. Although it does beg a bunch of questions, such as how Wonder knows how to turn on and operate a vehicle. Because whether Richie was joking about Wonder being sighted or not, he definitely didn't seem to be joking about the car moving. Celebrities have also noted that Wonder is very good at identifying them from a distance and approaching them. In an interview whose source I haven't been able to identify, Boy George apparently once related a story of how Wonder approached him at a party and put him in a headlock. An actor-comedian Anthony Anderson told Stephen Colbert in 2016 that Stevie Wonder's blindness is an act, and that he walked on stage and directly went to Anderson. Anderson added that Wonder beat him in a basketball free throw competition, although that part could have been a joke. Finally, Bomani Jones, an ESPN commentator and sports writer, is absolutely convinced Wonder can see, and even says his son sold Wonder 3 plasma televisions. Reading through the comment sections of YouTube videos or blog posts about Wonder's possibly faking his blindness, some posters have stories of their own. YouTube user at BennyShaversMusic590, for example, says that a friend who played jazz bass told him that in 1984, Wonder was tossing Cheez-Its in the air and eating them. So, is Wonder faking the extent of his blindness? It's an interesting question, but if he's sighted, it's a heck of a con played out over 50 years. And it would have had to have begun when he was only 11 years old, because that's how old he was when he was signed to Motown's Tamla label. But he also wouldn't be the only celebrity to fake a medical issue, or how bad that issue is, either for sympathy or to stand out. Without naming names, I've heard more than a few celebrities accused of fabricating obscure or trendy illnesses in order to get their names in the paper or explain away behaviors. We don't want to think of celebrities being that calculating, but even non-celebrities do it. In fact, only a few months ago, I saw an instance on Twitter of a very small-scale independent author faking having cancer and accepting GoFundMe money for non-existent treatment. This has been called Munchausen by Internet.
I had no idea that much was going on about that particular conspiracy, meaning like so many folks had comments about it. But maybe, I mean, hear me out. Maybe he's only partially blind. Like he has some percent of visual ability, especially for things he's familiar with, like object size. I mean, the size of just Shaq himself. I mean, I don't know. That's really interesting.
A conspiracy theory that I find really interesting is the idea that Canadian Prime Minister Justin Trudeau is actually former Cuban leader Fidel Castro's son. On the face of it, it sounds totally wild, right? Why in the world would Trudeau be related to Castro? This theory first appeared on Reddit in 2016. A Reddit user suggested that Trudeau was the child of Margaret Trudeau and Fidel Castro. The first piece of evidence was visual. Trudeau, the user claimed, looks nothing like his father, former Canadian Prime Minister Pierre Trudeau, but a lot like a young Castro. The second piece of evidence is geographic. During their second honeymoon in April 1971, the Trudeaus sailed around the Caribbean, opening up the possibility that they could have visited Cuba without reporting the trip. Conveniently, this would have been about 8.5 months before Trudeau was born. If you're finding it weird that Trudeau would have been conceived during his parents' honeymoon, both Margaret and Pierre seem to have taken advantage of the sexual liberation of the times. Margaret even had affairs with American celebrities such as Ted Kennedy and Jack Nicholson. And when the Trudeaus made an official visit to Cuba 5 years later, they seemed to get along fantastically with Castro, as though this wasn't their first meeting. That's the third and final piece of evidence, by the way, the apparent friendliness between Castro and the Trudeaus. But this evidence, scant as it is even thinner than it seems. It's true that Trudeau may look like Castro in some photos, but he actually does look like his father Pierre, too. Trudeau birthers like to show pictures of a young Castro next to Trudeau and compare them to photos of Pierre as an old man. But the truth is, Pierre certainly looked much different as a young man. Nor would Margaret have kept quiet about a dalliance with Castro. She wrote openly about her affairs and wild life. If she was willing to spill the beans on sleeping with members of the Rolling Stones, why would she have kept mum about Castro?
I don't know, Karen. My brain can't compute that one very well at all. Diana, what about you? What's your favorite conspiracy theory?
I don't know that I have a favorite conspiracy theory, but the ones we're talking about today are indeed fun. And a fun one I found is that people believe that Disney created the movie Frozen as a way to, in essence, hack Google's search algorithm and distract all of us from information about how the late Walt Disney was cryogenically frozen. This rumor about Walt Disney's corpse being frozen in a cryogenic chamber to be revived at a later date apparently started a few weeks after Disney died, back in 1966. In early 1967, a reporter for a tabloid newspaper called The National Spotlight claimed he had snuck into St. Joseph's Hospital in Burbank, California, directly across the street from the Disney Studios, and where Walt Disney was treated during his final illness. As the story went, the reporter disguised himself as an orderly, broke into a storage room, and saw the deceased Disney suspended in a cryogenic metal cylinder. Apparently, several former Disney employees perpetuated the myth over the following decades, and sporadic claims have brought the myth back into the spotlight, such as the claim that Disney's burial spot was a freezer stored underneath the Pirates of the Caribbean ride at Disneyland. The conspiracy has garnered so much attention, in fact, that Disney's daughter actually wrote, "There is absolutely no truth that my father, Walt Disney, wished to be frozen. I doubt that my father had ever heard of cryonics." What could have aided in this conspiracy's lasting power is that Walt Disney was an avid science fiction fan. In the last film he produced, knowing of his impending demise, appeared to make laser beam eye contact with each colleague as he told them what he expected of their performance in the future and that he hoped to see them soon. Further, it is possible that Disney read, or at least heard of, Robert C.W. Edinger's 1964 book called The Prospect of Immortality. This synthesized both believable and less likely ideas about cryonics. Despite these persistent rumors, available documentation indicates that Walt Disney was cremated. Although Disney's preferences regarding the disposal of his body are not public record, instructions or provisions for his funeral and burial were not included in his will, other publicly available material is entirely consistent with the claim that he was cremated. So much for that conspiracy theory.
All right, so I agree that picking a favorite conspiracy theory is difficult for many reasons, but here's one you guys might find interesting. As you may remember, I used to live in Denver. Well, one of the most prolific local conspiracies that has reached global attention is about the Denver International Airport. And I was shocked to read about the number of conspiracies regarding just this one location. So a little backstory. The Denver Airport was originally like within the city limits, but due to popularity and growth, they had to move it like 27 years ago, way out east. Well, the construction of the new airport was real drama. It was 16 months late in starting construction. And by then, I mean, this is 1995. By then, it was already $2 billion over budget, which would be nearly $4 billion today. All right, so the Denver International Airport is the largest airport in the country by surface area. In addition, it's known for its conspicuously long runways. It added its sixth and longest runway 8 years after opening. And this one is the longest commercial runway in North America at 16,000 feet. And it doesn't really help that it's been pointed out that from an aerial view, the airport and the runways resemble a swastika. But I believe that the average Joe can understand how this is hugely beneficial to high volume traffic. All right, so what are these theories? The first one includes the deep state, Illuminati, New World Order, and the lizard people, that they conduct their meetings underneath the airport. Now, these theories have made their way onto Netflix specials, documentaries, articles worldwide. And if you've ever been, by the way, you know how large this airport is and how spread out the terminals are. There's a high-speed train underground connecting it all. But alongside that, there's a network of tunnels moving luggage, workers, and golf carts. So with the over-budgeting and the network of the underground tunnels, we have the meeting of the minds location, apparently. All right, another one is based on, you guys recall that Steven Spielberg movie, Close Encounters of the Third Kind? It's commonly believed that the coordinates that were in that movie that were given to the humans by the aliens take you directly to the Denver International Airport. But in reality, these coordinates are like 51 miles off base from the airport in the northeast direction. So great movie, total classic, but doesn't predict the future or get you to the Denver International Airport. Another conspiracy is that the underground tunnels I mentioned previously are connected to the Cheyenne Mountains, the home of NORAD, the North American Aerospace Defense Command. Now, if this was true, it would mean that the military has created a 120-mile escape route to survival bunkers. Although, honestly, this one is the hardest for me to believe because the Cheyenne Mountains are down in Colorado Springs and, well, yeah. So my favorite one is the belief that the big blue Mustang sculpture, the one with the red glowing eyes at the entrance, is cursed. It's possibly the most iconic aspect of the airport, but it comes with an unbelievable story. people refer to the sculpture as Blucifer, and it's believed to be cursed because part of it fell on the artist, Luis Jimenez, in 2006, actually killing him. Ultimately, it was finished. It was completed by his sons, who added the red glowing eyes. But to be fair, the red eyes are a tribute to their father, who owned a neon sign shop. So people actually drive by the sculpture and they treat it like they're passing a cemetery, like they pray. All right, next one. The Denver International Airport has sinister gargoyles. People believe the gargoyles are evil and point to the existence of a new world order. Okay, so we can all agree on the history of gargoyles, right? They sit atop buildings to protect a site, right? Well, in the airport, the gargoyles are part of Notre Denver by artist Terry Allen, which features two cast bronze gargoyles perched inside suitcases, watching over the east and west baggage areas. Specifically, the gargoyles sit slightly above travelers' heads to help ensure that they had safe arrival and their luggage is safe. They also added a talking gargoyle named Greg. He can be found right there by a baggage claim. It's all very cute and all very unsinister. Lastly, for this podcast, we have the conspiracy of secret messages. It's believed there are secret inscriptions pointing to the secret society. So on the floor of the Great Hall of the airport, there are the letters capital AU and capital AG. And it's believed that this is the abbreviation for the deadly toxin Australia Antigen, which is said to be the Illuminati's secret weapon to accomplish the genocide. And I say the in quote fingers. In reality, the atomic symbols for gold and silver, representing Colorado's mining history. The inscription itself is just part of a much larger piece, traditional Native American design, and it all ties into the theme of the airport, which includes that external big design of the Colorado Mountains above the main portion of the airport that you can see from like a million miles away. Something I kind of found interesting is that since all these conspiracy theories have long surrounded the airport itself, the airport folks have decided to kind of play off that reputation and kind of play into it. So hosting a conspiracy theory exhibit, using signs during different seemingly never-ending construction to suggest that the delays were part of the work of aliens. When the airport turned 25 in February 2020, officials released a list of some of the top conspiracy theories. But hear me out. I think that these displays, when they're seen by passerbyers through the airport, I think they only fuel the theories. Let me explain. I have a real life example on this. So I actually learned about these conspiracies from a friend of mine while we were in the Denver International Airport. She pointed out the gargoyles, and I get it. They were kind of in like a weird position and they were kind of hiding in suitcases. And then she proceeds to like tell me all about the conspiracy theories. But now I know that it was an intentional artistic choice, but you know, it was just very interesting that I kind of see the full picture here now. Mainly to me, it's just wild how many conspiracy theories they have for just this one airport. And there's actually a lot more too.
Okay. I'll admit I'm having a little trouble following this one. There are so many possible conspiracies, including gargoyles, of all things. But also, why would a shadowy cabal like the Illuminati meet under an airport? Call me crazy, but if I'm going to have secret evil meetings, I think I'd choose a place that didn't have thousands of people passing through every hour and where I'd have to go through the TSA each time, you know?
Right? I mean, all the people that would need to be involved for hiding the arrivals and departures of mysterious, sinister elites. I think the moral of the story here is don't go over budget. It makes the human imagination go wild.
I mean, no walking around in hooded cloaks either, for sure. So Caitlin, hit us. What's your favorite conspiracy theory?
Okay, so first of all, I absolutely love conspiracy theories of all shapes and kinds. Government cover-ups, true crime conspiracies, aliens, sports cheating conspiracies like Deflategate. Basically anything that tickles that but what if part of the brain. Just like you, Karen, I'm really not sure if I have a favorite conspiracy theory, but one that I absolutely love talking about with people is the idea that Mattress Firm is actually a front for some sort of criminal enterprise. Mainly people say money laundering.
I'm with you on this. Does anyone actually know anyone who's bought a mattress from Mattress Firm? I haven't.
You're ahead of us on this. For anyone who may be unfamiliar, Mattress Firm is a chain specialty retail store that sells mattresses. Headquartered in Houston, Texas, the company was founded in 1986 by three college best friends. This all sounds very mundane. So what started this conspiracy theory? And what, if any, evidence exists to support it? Like many, this conspiracy theory seems to have originated on Reddit. It started with three observations. Why are there so many Mattress Firm stores? Why are they often so close to one another? And how are they still open when nobody ever seems to be shopping in them? There's definitely some merit to these observations, which is to say there's data to support them, and it's not just anecdotal. According to data from Scrape Hero, as of 2023, there are 2,439 Mattress Firm locations across the United States in just 1,371 cities, meaning that there is a relatively large percentage of cities with more than just one Mattress Firm store. For instance, at one time in Schererville, Indiana, there were 5 Mattress Firm stores within 1 mile of each other. And at the company's retail peak in 2016, it operated upwards of 3,600 stores. So I imagine at one point, there was even more clustering. Believers in this conspiracy theory are also quick to point out that mattresses aren't the type of product that consumers just buy over and over regularly, the way we do something like shoes. The average age of a discarded mattress is over 11 years, and some people wait upwards of 15 to start looking for a replacement. The mattress industry itself only recommends replacing your mattress every 8 to 10 years. With so many locations and a seemingly small market for new mattresses, what, other than money laundering, can be the explanation for so many stores?
This sounds like a good opportunity for analysis of competing hypotheses, but go on.
You're right. It turns out that the number and proximity of these Mattress Firm locations might not be so odd after all. Over time, Mattress Firm aggressively acquired several rivals, such as Sleepy's and Sleep Train, and kept the real estate that those companies owned, rebranding them as Mattress Firms. Former CEO Kevin Murphy said that Mattress Firm preserved, quote, convenient locations in highly trafficked areas to keep the company, again, quote, top of mind when it's come to buy a mattress. And this is actually a legitimate and reasonable business strategy. They're trying to be the market leader in as many areas as possible, becoming customers' first and maybe even their only choice for a new mattress. Also, mattress stores are more economical than you might think. The markup on mattresses is so high, sometimes more than 50%, that stores only need to sell a few to make a profit. This means a small number of customers can keep multiple stores in business. Overheads at these stores are also low because most employees work primarily on commission, and products are shipped directly from manufacturers rather than taking up inventory space at, say, a retail shop or a Mattress Firm distribution center.
This presents a good math problem. How many mattresses does a store have to sell each month to be able to pay rent? It reminds me of the definitely a money laundering Chinese restaurant in my parents' tiny town that never has customers. But okay, tell me how this conspiracy theory started, because it has to have an origin story, right?
While this conspiracy theory's origins are rooted in the almost comical presence of so many stores close together, it was also fueled by some of the odd and allegedly shady business scandals at which Mattress Firm and Steinhoff International, their holding company, have been the center of. In 2009, for example, Mattress Firm sued its former in-house vice president of real estate, a Texas-based developer, and a flooring company. Mattress Firm accused the three of padding construction contracts by adding $1 per square foot to the flooring price in new and remodeled locations. Mattress Firm eventually dropped these claims, but it's unclear if the party settled or what other resolution they may have come to. And then in December 2017, Steinhoff International revealed, quote, accounting irregularities in its financials. Some of the holding company's top managers entered into made-up transactions with independent third parties to give the illusion of income. This was used to hide financial losses that some of the holding company's individual businesses were experiencing. While this is certainly cause for question, it's not indicative of money laundering. The point of money laundering is to funnel large sums of money through an intermediary source to hide where the money is coming from. In this scandal, Steinhoff was just trying to hide that it was losing money. Further, there were no mentions of Mattress Firm in any of the reporting. It was more of a tangential connection. In 2018, it was reported that Mattress Firm filed a lawsuit against two former executives, accusing them of skimming money, taking kickbacks, and taking bribes. Allegedly, the executives conspired with an outside real estate broker to push the company into expensive real estate locations based on false sales forecasts. The executives would tip off the outside real estate broker to where the next locations would be so he could buy it himself. In return, the executives allegedly got diamonds, vacations, and stakes in other real estate deals. Again, this isn't money laundering, but shady purported business dealings may have added fuel to the conspiracy fire. The last two incidents that conspiracy theorists cite as evidence of Mattress Firm laundering money are former CEO Ryan Murphy's resignation and the company's 2018 bankruptcy filing. But again, while these events are certainly a little scandalous, they aren't really indicative of a larger criminal enterprise or money laundering.
I think the key takeaway here is that there are a lot of conspiracy theories in the world, And they're an excellent way to test some of the structured analytic techniques that we've discussed over the course of the podcast. If you run into one of these conspiracy theories and it starts to sound credible, go ahead and test it out. Try devil's advocacy. Try analysis of competing hypotheses. See what you learn from it. Next episode, we're going to talk about the manipulation of information. This is a super relevant topic in today's news cycle and something we should all be wary of. So thanks for listening and see you next time here at Gossip Int.